The Tom Woods Show, episode 441.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Peter Schiff's gold company, Schiff Gold, is holding a special sweepstakes just for Tom Woods Show listeners. They're giving away a 1 ounce gold coin worth about $1,200. Enter for free at tomwoods.com/gold. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Delighted to welcome back to the program once again, Ron Paul, a man who truly does need no introduction. We all know Ron Paul as the 12-term congressman, now retired, three-time presidential candidate, number one New York Times best-selling author, and overall hero. Today we're going to be talking about his brand new book called Swords into Plowshares, A Life in Wartime and a Future of Peace and Prosperity. You can get that book directly through tomwoods.com/swords. That'll take you right to the Amazon page. Let's get that Amazon figure way, way up there and get a lot of attention for this important book. I'll tell you, as many of you longtime listeners know, the greatest honor I've ever had, really, in my life was speaking at the Rally for the Republic in 2008, where Ron Paul had his own convention, in effect, right down the street from the Republican National Convention that was going to be nominating John McCain. And we had our own event, and it was absolutely tremendous. 10,000 people at the Target Center in Minnesota. Absolutely fantastic. Wonderful thing. It's been an honor for me to have my books endorsed by Ron Paul, and for me, in turn, to do what I can to support his message and get the word out about him. Stick around, by the way, after my conversation with Ron Paul, because I got a couple of freebies for you guys that I want to give out. But for right now, let's welcome Ron Paul back to the show. Ron, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to be with you again.
Well, what a delight it is to be able to talk to you about a brand new book that you have that's forthcoming, and I'm going to be linking to it on today's show notes page. Believe it or not, I am on episode 441, so tomwoods.com/441 is where to go to find out about this book. Swords into Plowshares, I just told people the full title. Fantastic. Why now? It seems like now we're not involved in a major war like Iraq. We've got all these little hot spots here and there. What led you to write a book on war at this particular moment?
Well, our government tells us we're in war for a long time. We're in perpetual war. They want perpetual peace. So they say we have a war against terrorism forever, and they don't define it, so therefore they can do whatever they want. So yes, there's a war going on, but if you look at our history, it's just filled with a history of war. And in the book, more or less, outlines my personal memories and experience with war. But I think you make an important point, yes, right now, and I might even mention that in the book. You know, World War I isn't going on, World War II isn't going on, but there's still a lot of people in this country that are paying for wars, a lot of people still dying. The atmosphere is that we are the policemen of the world. There are still some silly notions that war will end the recession or depression, and those are the kind of things. So I don't think the... history is going to be reversed. I don't think we're going to reverse history under current thinking. Of course, one of my goals in the book is try to get people to think differently, that we don't have to have perpetual war, that maybe mankind can progress, and it's a wild stab at maybe some wishful thinking, but I actually believe it, that there's a possibility that we can advance as a society and as a humanity. But we have a long way to go.
I want to make sure people understand what the structure of this book is. It is deeply personal, much of it. You talk about your childhood. You talk about your own experiences observing war. You talk about your career in Congress. You talk about your decision to go into medicine because it was the opposite of war. You were saving life instead of taking people's lives. I mean, this is all intensely personal testimony, but you have a lot of very good arguments against war, moral arguments, economic arguments. It is a one-stop shop, really, this book. And I would like to start, if I may, with your background. I was very surprised to read that a 10-year-old Ron Paul cheered when he learned of the death of Franklin Roosevelt, and your father explained that you shouldn't have done that.
Yes, and I guess it had an impact on me because I was expecting one reaction, And like I said in the book, that it must have been obvious our family was very, very Republican and that they weren't such supporters of Roosevelt. But I stepped over the line, and I can remember my dad not getting upset or anything like that, but just pointing out, we don't do that. You don't cheer the death of a president. And I remember that very clearly. Now, if he would have responded differently, that might have had an effect on me too, but I remembered it very clearly that, that you have to be careful on what you advocate when it comes to violence. But, that was, an interesting little thing that, just stuck in my memory as I went, and sorted some of these things out.
As I read this, I was reminded of the speech you gave at the Rally for the Republic all the way back in 2008, in which you reflected on that song Universal Soldier, which you had asked Amy Allen to sing, and you reflected on your own conduct as a flight surgeon in the military in the 1960s, and you said, you know, I was the Universal Soldier. I was the person who helped perpetuate the system by going along instead of resisting. And I was sitting with Norm Singleton, and we all looked at each other and thought, here's this guy who was a medical doctor, and he's still rebuking himself for not doing enough. And then right here in the book, chapter one, one of your sections is, I was no hero in the Air Force. Do you care to elaborate on that?
Well, it is annoying because I still get that. All you have to do is say, I'm a veteran. Well, thank you for your service. And there was a time when I was rather neutral on it when I was drafted and put in there that I had to do it. That's with the law of the land, and I wasn't going to prison. I wasn't going to give up my professional career, by taking ground. I wasn't, as strong as Muhammad Ali. Just think of what he gave up. I think I mentioned it there, at least someplace I've mentioned it. That's his greatest fight ever, is the fact that he was willing to take the government on and refuse to serve. So, no, I think it's wrong to glorify military people and glorify the so-called heroes. I got into a lot of trouble when Chris Kyle, got killed, and I didn't show enough sympathy for that and didn't recognize his greatness as far as defending America. So I got a lot of grief, even from the people in the audience that I thought were more libertarian. So I think you just can't be flip-flopping. You have to know what you believe in and what you stand. And if these wars are not justified, it's just not reasonable to endorse them. And we need people to stand up against these unnecessary, unconstitutional, worthless wars that are go on. And that, of course, is one of the goals of the book, is try to get people to recognize that you can still be a conservative, a libertarian, an American, and say that I don't support these wars. And they say, well, you don't support America? No, we don't support our leaders making dumb decisions. And too often, that I reveal from personal experience, too many dumb decisions were made, over these many, many years that I had to, sort of suffer the consequence from.
Not long ago, I had a gentleman on the show that Daniel McAdams recommended to me, Bill Galvin, who deals with conscientious objectors. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me that, and this is to your point in your book about the peaceful nature of mankind. I'm still sort of skeptical of that, but you were giving some evidence that actually people have to be trained to want to kill people. And what Bill pointed out is that they find time and again that maybe 70% of the time the soldiers are not actually shooting to kill. They're shooting deliberately to miss people. Right. And it's a minority of them who are shooting to kill. So maybe there is something to what you're saying.
No, I think that is true. I think it was much more true in World War I than any other time. The war, we got in at the end of that war, and even though they had all that hoopla and that patriotism and the songs and the sending off of the troops to save Europe and all, I think a lot of the young men that we sent over there weren't that excited about just shooting people that they don't even know. But after that, they recognized that there were some studies made that they weren't shooting to kill, and our military has become much more involved in training. And this is why they have to work much harder at creating, the devil, the monster. And there always has to be one. There always has to be a Hitler. You know, if they had to, in order for us to have the people go along with that invasion of Iraq as early as 1990, when George Bush Sr. went in, they had to prove that the Saddam Hussein was a monster. And then, of course, when George Bush Jr. went in, it was continuous. They have to have an enemy, and they have to build up the hatred, and then people are more likely to shoot. But they found out that if they did the training where they literally used the rifle and had images up of a person, that they might increase the number of people who do in the real shooting. But no, I think this is all what human nature is about. There's good sides of the human nature and bad side. And I guess if you get propagandized and you get to believing the stories of people who want to benefit from the war, people will go along. And of course, that's the story of the universal soldier. And too often we all got influenced by it. And I just think that the universal soldier, I wanted to refute her conclusion because she says, and that's the way it will always be. The young people will always go. So I'm appealing, the dedication is to the younger generation to say it doesn't have to always be that we go. If we can't get the right people in government, we have to stand up against the government. We should refuse the money and refuse the support and be a Muhammad Ali and refuse to be drafted to go fight a war that has nothing to do with our national security.
Ron, let's pause for a moment to thank our sponsor. One of Ron Paul's most outspoken supporters in public life has been Peter Schiff. Like Ron Paul, Peter Schiff predicted the collapse of 2008. And like Ron Paul, Peter Schiff was laughed at and dismissed. Well, they weren't laughing in 2008. Also like Ron Paul, Peter Schiff believes that precious metals have to be an important part of your portfolio. Now, I myself always get my gold and silver through Schiff Gold, Peter Schiff's gold company. And I'm happy to tell you that Schiff Gold is holding a special sweepstakes just for listeners of this show. They're giving away a 1 ounce Canadian gold maple leaf coin worth about $1,200. Enter for free at tomwoods.com/gold. But hurry, it ends on July 13th, 2015, and I will be announcing the winner on this show on July 15th, episode 446. TomWoods.com/gold. Good luck. Ron, do you think that with technology and the internet, and now that we have the ability to communicate with people and interact on Twitter and Facebook with people all over the world, we can get YouTubes and see what life is like in countries that are being demonized in our media. We can get a sense of, well, frankly, the whole human community, that this may actually be the thing that makes it more and more difficult for the war makers to get people to consent to the wars.
Well, let's hope so, and let's hope we know how to make good use of this. But the question is, will technology always prevent us from having it taken away from it by our government? You know, they're already, you know, hounding us to death. And if you say the wrong word on your internet or whatever, they're at your doorstep or on your telephone or anything. So, yes, they buckle down. And it's going to be a tough fight. But I lean toward optimism there, that technology is what will protect us in our ability to share this information. I remember during that period of time with Tiananmen Square, which was about 89, I think, they were using fax machines. Remember the pictures that they were showing? And they were passing out information, which they were never able to do that before. Tiananmen Square wasn't exactly, you know, the greatest victory, but in my book, I argue the case that the tank man was probably had a greater victory and influence in changing China than the tank man, the guy that was running the tank. You know, I know there's far from perfection in China, but like I said, you know, at least we're not killing each other like we were when I was in high school. One of my teachers went off after having been in World War II. He went off to Korea, and I never saw him again. He didn't come back. He was one of our coaches. And this just didn't make any sense at all. So I would hope that the ideas are positive and that we can win. I see the internet as being very, very positive. But I'm also encouraged by the person that influenced me a whole lot, and was Leonard Reed. And he says it's not a numbers game. It isn't. Don't get depressed because you don't have 51%, even though you need a majority of support to go along. But what really counts is that 7, 8, or 9% of people who are thought leaders who will put the issues out there and have them be attractive, you know, by the young people. And I think that's what's happening, because we see so often, you know, some young people doing bizarre things. But I also see what happens when you get somebody like Jeff Frazee with YAL going to the campuses. I'm sure you must be visiting campuses too. We see a lot of nice young people. If you go to see the YAL rallies, one day I was kidding Amanda, that's Jeff's wife. I said, you know, they are so clean cut and nice looking, polite kids. I said, it almost looks like they have a dress code, because they're dressed so well. Well, and it's exactly opposite of what people would like to paint our college kids. She says, well, he does have a dress code.
So good for Jeff. So
and there you are. They have ties and coats on, and they're clean cut. And I'm glad to know that I don't have to get 51% of the people to belong to YAL. We just need a few more in YAL, and we need that, you know, along with the work that you have done and the work that Mises Institute does. All this and the work that you've done now, you know, with the curriculum. So this is going to evolve and continue to build. One thing that amazes me now is running into people around the country. Somebody called me the other day, and he was involved in politics, which some people question, but he had made great strides. Oh, I think it was the young man that won a state Senate seat up in Maine and was doing good and had some laws passed. And it was one person all by himself, but he was energized. And, you know, they used to ask me, what should I do now? I said, just find something. Do what you want. You know, there's a job for you out there.
Well, there's so much in what you just said. Two things. First of all, YAL, for people who may not, for the three people listening who may not know what that is, that's Young Americans for Liberty. And what I love about that is that they have their annual convention coming up in end of this month and into August. It'll be the second year in a row that I've spoken at that. And they limit it to 350 activists in the audience. They have to cut it off. Now, Ron, you know, years ago, we wouldn't have had a problem limiting it to 350. We would have been overjoyed if we could get 350. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, you mentioned the curriculum. We're talking about your homeschool program. As you say, I've been creating courses for that. It's ronpaulhomeschool.com. And I noticed that you mentioned in the book that homeschoolers have a better chance of finding out the real truth about American wars than somebody sitting in a typical classroom.
Well, that's for sure. And, you know, now the big stink over how anybody who even says anything Southern, or that you shouldn't abolish the use of a flag. I mean, that is all based on hatred. Now, if you're a homeschooler, you might have a different view of the Civil War. And you might, I remember being on one of the liberal talk shows, and that subject came up. And there was one person on there, he happened to have been black. He was very upset with me, saying, well, we shouldn't have fought the Civil War. We should have just, bought the slaves and released them. Other countries got rid of slavery without it. And he didn't like that. A year later, I was on his show again. He says, you know, I've been thinking about that. I think that has some merit. Of course, I stole that idea from some other person, probably Rice for Lou Rockwell. this is the whole thing. Homeschoolers have a much better chance of understanding history. And all the way back to, you know, Jefferson with the Hamilton, those debates. And others have come up to me. One of our friends that's worked with me for a long time is Norm Singleton. You know, of all the things that we do and all the things that he has done politically and works with Campaign for Liberty, he said to me that he thinks this is the important thing that we're doing right now. And it's not like that tomorrow everybody's going to make a lot of money off it. But if we're interested in changing the people's mind 5 or 10 or 15 years from now, we may be well rewarded in the sense of satisfaction that we have changed people's minds and changed their attitudes, that maybe some of these so-called naive ideas I have that we can have a more peaceful world than we've ever had in the past. See, my point in the book is that there was a tremendous advancement scientifically, you know, before the Industrial Revolution. And I go back, and my dad was born the beginning of the 20th century, and he knew people that was born all through the 19th century. And the technology that they experienced, and in spite of government, the prosperity skyrocketed. Just think how well-off people are in the benefit. But so much of that technology went into war machines and learning how to kill people. So we had all this technology, and we used it for bombing and killing people, nuclear weapons, and all this. Why can't the human race advance socially in the same manner if the knowledge is there? So we use that scientific knowledge to do some good things, improve the living standard, but we also, unfortunately, used it to enhance position of war and the cause of war. So that's what I'd like to end, is stop using that technology for war. Start using our brain for saying yes. And that is why we have a book called Swords into Plowshares. And that of course, has been around a bit, that idea. And even though people say the Bible says there'll be wars and rumors of war, if you read carefully, there are suggestions in the Bible that said there's no reason why you can't think about and work toward taking the swords and melting them down and turning them into peaceful efforts.
You know, that is such a wonderful note on which to end, but I refuse to let you end on that, because I do, before I let you go, want to ask you just one thing, please. If you cast your mind back about 8 years to the Republican debate in which you had the confrontation with Giuliani, I wonder if you could just take a moment and share with us what was going through your mind as you said those things about American foreign policy, about blowback, about the attacks of 9/11 being a response to U.S. involvement in the Middle East and so on and so forth. We sometimes look at you as this titan who is absolutely fearless, and no doubt you are, but you're also a human being. And right there, you had a national television audience, you had an audience in person that was not sympathetic to what you were saying. Can you recreate for us what was going through your mind during those moments?
Well, not a whole lot as far as contemplating what the meaning of what I'm going to say will do to the campaign. Never crossed my mind. I was doing what comes naturally, what I am enthusiastic about, and I had talked about that. If you look back, I started opposing that war in 1998, saying that the Iraq Liberation Act is going to lead to war. And so I really worked hard, and I thought my job coming back into Congress was to stop this war. Of course, I didn't. It was a disaster. So all I did was repeat something I considered very, very spontaneous. And I didn't really, you know, for the rest of that debate, I didn't give it a whole lot of thought. Of course, I knew that Giuliani got a little bit annoyed, but that didn't bother me too much. But immediately afterwards, you know, the press hounded me. Are you dropping out? Are you going to do this and all this stuff? What are you talking about? And then, because that didn't cross my mind either. But then there was a neat little thing that did happen. And you remember, I'm sure, Kent Snyder, the campaign manager. Yeah. And Kent was such a delightful person, unfortunately, no longer with us. And as the media was hounding me, Kent came up in his very, very quiet manner and tapped me on the shoulder. He says, Ron, he says, you're winning like crazy on the post-election, post-debate polls. So, yeah. That was rather dramatic. But the best part about the ending of this story is, you know, who gets the last laugh is the best off. So that went on. And instead of that ending, everything I was going to say, the credibility kept building, which just dumbfounded me. I didn't know exactly where's this coming from. So I would say it was the beginning of having some type of a chance to reach a lot of people. But it was actually at the time of reversal, even though that was early in the campaign for Giuliani. And I can remember very clearly, as we had a couple more primaries, there was a headline in the Los Angeles Times. It said, Giuliani comes in. Oh, Ron Paul beats Giuliani for the second time. So I don't know where we were. Of course, sometimes I came in first or second, and then they didn't even put my name down. But anyway, they recognized that I beat Giuliani twice, and I think that's about the time I can't take this any longer.
Yeah, that's right. And there's no Rudy Giuliani Institute, and nobody's going to be reading Rudy Giuliani's books even a week from now, much less in the years to come. But I am certain that people will be reading this book, which is Swords into Plowshares, A Life in Wartime and a Future of Peace and Prosperity. I wish you the absolute best of luck with this extremely important book, and thanks so much for being with us today, Ron.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to be with you.
All right, everybody, now for the freebies. First of all, if you've ever considered starting to blog and you're afraid nobody will read it because how are they going to know about your blog, I'd like to help. I'd like to help get publicity for your blog. I mean, after all, I've got, you know, well over 100,000 people following me on social media. I have a fairly popular podcast here, an awful lot of downloads. I've got a fairly substantial mailing list. I've got a well-trafficked website. One way or another, I will help get the word out about your blog if you follow the steps over at tomwoods.com/publicity. When you go to sign up to create your blog, just go through my affiliate link, for example, tomwoods.com/blue for Bluehost, and then just drop me a line through tomwoods.com, and I will be very glad to help you get some early publicity for your blog and give you a little bit of a push as you join us out here in the so-called blogosphere. And you will also find at tomwoods.com/publicity my short video taking you step by step to show you how easy it is to go from having no blog at all to 5 minutes later having your own blog. And I know Ron Paul would want you to have that blog and start talking about issues that matter to you. The second freebie is my ebook, 14 Hard Questions for Libertarians Answered. You can get that book for free by texting the word LIBERTY to 33444. You'll also get my weekly letter, which I think is sort of interesting, and it also keeps you up to date on people I'm talking to and topics I'm raising here on the show. And if you hate that, you can just throw it in the garbage, and you've got yourself, nevertheless, a free ebook. And of course, speaking of books, make sure and get Ron Paul's new book, Swords into Plowshares. The direct link for that is tomwoods.com/swords. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.